Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, an award-winning Premier League podcast. Hit subscribe and that way you won't miss an episode of the show again. In recent years, the Premier League has been dominated by Manchester City. We are very firmly in the Pep Guardiola era, an era in which City have become one of the most successful clubs in English football. But it wasn't always like that, and today on Football Social Daily, we're talking to someone who's experienced both the old and the new at Manchester City, ex-Blues defender Nader Manua.
That summer came, Mark Hughes came, brought in Vincent Kompany, Zabaleta and so on, and then all of a sudden, bang, takeover. New owners are here, Robinho's here, and the talk about how this is going to be the greatest thing ever.
Of course, that Abu Dhabi takeover has catapulted City to new heights, with the watershed moment being that first silverware under Roberto Mancini. But despite the Italian's legendary status at the club, it never worked out between him and Nadum, and Anua feels there are some things he still needs to get off of his chest.
I'm glad that City are in a position that they're in, and some of my friends won Premier League titles, but I'm always left in this position where, like, I kind of need to speak to Mancini at some point before I die, figure out what caused that drastic change at the football club.
In this episode of Football Social Daily, we'll hear about Nadum's journey from academy player to first team regular, the transition from Main Road to the Etihad, and of course whether his mate Micah Richards really did burst onto the scene.
Oh mate, like no other. 100% burst onto the scene, yeah.
Someone who made 188 Premier League appearances for Manchester City, for Sunderland and for Queen's Park Rangers. A warm welcome to the show to Nader Manua. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, I'm very good. That's a nice intro. Thanks for having me, mate. How are you?
I'm well, mate, and it's good to have you with us. You're not a stranger to the world of podcasting, are you?
No. Interestingly, because of some of the stuff that I'm doing at the minute, I'm wondering how many more I need to do before I actually am just a podcaster. So I think I'm drifting down that route, to be honest.
You did your own series, didn't you?
Yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah, I did my own series, and I'm involved in three Man City related ones now, and there's an ESPN one. I think I might be a podcaster.
I reckon if you're into double figures, you can claim it.
Yeah. As soon as we were well into first double podcast, figures. We all started updating our LinkedIn saying we're
a podcaster. Yeah, it's a weird one though. When I just disregard all 188 of those Premier League games, saying no, I'm just a podcaster. That's the main thing.
Maybe yeah. As soon as you record your 189th podcast, which you might have already done,
you've definitely got more podcast caps thing.
I'm a
veteran now.
I think it's official. I'm a podcaster.
I think we can claim it. And obviously one of those podcasts, of the many that you're involved with, as you mentioned, is the official Manchester City podcast, which launched with the Sports Social Podcast Network very, very recently.
Yeah, it certainly has. Like, I'll be completely, like, transparent. So I left City 11 years ago. But upon retirement, like, they want me back, whether it's to work for the charity, whether it's to do some of the media stuff, or, like, it's a significant role to be sitting creating something that means so much to so many people. So they could have very easily forgotten about me because the club's kind of changed from the last time I was there, you could say. Kind of changed.
Slightly.
Yeah, just a little bit. But it's good to sit there because I think the way that I describe the club, it's like got the heart. It's the heart of a small club in the body of a giant.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that heart that sort of you can connect with people. Like if you felt it once, you felt it throughout. So it's nice that I'm still a part of that, and I can talk about my own experiences and still be relevant to people who went from like watching me to seeing John Stones play in midfield. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's all good.
Who are some of the people you've chatted to on the show? There's been some good guests already.
Yeah, Kyle Walker, Scott Carson,
Owen
Steph
Hargreaves
Orton.
This week, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Owen Hargreaves as well. So it's myself and it's Rob Pollard, and Rob's like more structured in terms of how he does his interviews. Whereas I'm more informed and I just listen to conversations and like the stuff which I want to ask someone based on something that they say, whereas he's more so got the structure of how he wants to
so
do
like
things.
A bit more semi-structured.
Yeah, I like to keep it flowing. But like when people say really interesting things, like I think that could end up being more interested in the question which I want to ask, because then they're going to give me, they're going to give us rather something that wasn't expected. So I like the fact that we can both sit on there, and Rob is like very, he's not serious, but like, he's interviewing someone and then I'm there and there's another former pro. Oh, there's a pro there. And so they talk to me a bit differently. And it's almost like it's not really a podcast. We're just talking about the game. So I enjoy listening and learning about their situation because the club's very different to when I was there. But then also Rob can still find the structure, because otherwise I'd do like a 5-hour podcast. You know what I mean? I'd just be chatting away. But he sort of structures it and it's good. I think the fans like it. And they're desperate to just, as is the case with most football fans, to gain some level of insight.
Yeah, of course.
About the game, because we all love it. And you'd be amazed how many things you have in common with the people who play the game that you love so much.
It says here you started your Manchester City career in 2004, but you were probably part of the academy way before that. That's you were born in Nigeria and grew up in Manchester. So just tell us about how you first started at Manchester City.
I joined City's academy at the age of 10. To be official, it wasn't really an academy when I got scouted. It was a centre of excellence. And then as it turned over into an academy, I was Jim Cassell, who was the director. I was the first signing when it became an academy.
All right, that's a pretty big claim, to be fair.
Listen, if it wasn't for me, there'd be an off-field photo. Remember that, yeah? But yeah, I was the first signing. Obviously, they had the age groups and stuff, but when they made that transition to a different category, like that was great. And at the time, like I wasn't a massive City fan. I just liked football. I was playing for my Sunday league team, which I don't think they're going anymore, AFC Clayton. I used to play for my age group and the age group up. You play Saturday, Sunday. Loved it. Just loved playing football. And I got scouted. And interestingly, after I joined City, my dad actually came out and said that United were in for me as well. But my dad told the scout that I'd supported City, so I didn't want to go to United.
Burning bridges before you
even literally, he set that alight. Yeah, but I didn't know that. And at the time, it wasn't that deep.
But it was a big deal back then, because the Manchester United Academy was iconic for what it had produced.
I'll be clear. Do you know when United played Liverpool? Was it 95, 96? When Liverpool wore the white suits and Cantona scored in the FA Cup final?
Yeah.
So that summer, I actually had the Man United FA Cup cassette tape with the player singing a song on it. So like, I wasn't like a United fan, but I had that. So then the year later to be playing for City. But then the moment I joined City, that was that. Getting a chance to go to Main Road, further down the road to Ball Boy for City. And I remember as I was Ball Boy, and the guy who used to look after us, I'm so sad I've forgotten his name, he used to give me programs from the 80s and so on. So I was learning about City as it was happening. And honestly, the feeling of like being at Main Road in the little Ball Boy section, and you just sort of like peer through the door and you're seeing all the first team is just lined up ready to go out for a big game. And you see them walk out to like 30 odd thousand people. Oh my God, mate, it's amazing. And from then, like,
that's the bug.
Oh, I was all in. Yeah. Loved it. Loved like wearing the same shirt as the first team, even though it didn't fit because I was a bit bigger than most people at that sort of age. But it was amazing to see that journey. And I'm not old now, but I did Ball Boy for Sean Wright Phillips when he was in the youth team. You know what I mean? Playing in the youth cup and stuff like that. And he's 40 plus now, so you
and
put that
into
perspective.
And now you see Bradley Wright Phillips and he's retired. And then
exactly. Football, it's changed. It's changed an awful lot. But the academy was great. I had a great experience there. It's not obviously as plush as it is now. But like I say, the club still has the heart of a small, not small,
community.
But like, the community side is always there.
It remembers its roots, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Well,
yeah.
Talking
it's
of the roots
grounded.
Of Man City, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned Main Road, and obviously the Etihad is wildly different to Main Road, but there are still so many supporters that go and watch City at the Etihad that were there at Main Road. That was a proper old football ground, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What was that like to kind of be around that stadium at
no,
that time?
It was class. the feeling and the build-up before a game, you know, there's that sense around the sort of area in the Mossad and so on, getting on, I think it's the 111 that would take you there and all that stuff. And there's a huge sense of, yeah, I remember my roots, my friend. Piccadilly Gardens, the worst.
Brown used to get the bus to training as well, he told us.
I've got an anecdote for you, actually.
Go on,
did you go to Zaverian or Loreto?
I went to Zaverian, yeah.
So basically, I went to Loreto just round the corner.
Yeah.
And the head of year, every single year at the start of the year, said, so there's a boy you might know at Zaverian, his name is Nader Manua, and he had the choice of either going to study, I think she said chemical engineering, yeah, or he had the choice of choosing £60,000 a week to Manchester City. And guess what? She had a projector of that picture, which is behind Nader, yeah, which is of him, and she said, have a guess which one he chose.
Yeah,
she takes the next one, and we all just felt like, right, my dream's dead then.
Yeah.
We've got to go down the education
route. As you can see, you know, as I look back on my life, I'm clearly disappointed with playing professional football for 16 years. It's not really set me up for the rest of my life, but yeah.
That's right, you could have been a chemical engineer.
Yeah, to be fair though, that's the thing, I still could be. See, yeah, that's the difference, my friend. Didn't but not many people looking for 36-year-old footballers.
Yeah. Didn't you do an accounting thing as well?
I did, yeah. I did a SEMA accountancy course for a year. This was after I did my A-levels, which I finished while I was still playing in the Premier League and whatever. Right. And I thought, okay, in line with what I've done, what would be a nice thing? Because I got 3 A's for A-level, maths, business studies, and IT. I was like, it's cooking. You know what I mean? Like, that's me. Still playing. Like, what would filter into, what could I do off the back of that? So I said, let me do accounting. Honestly, one of the most boring years of my life doing that. And that's me trying to be respectful. I think what made it worse was that, you know, bear with me on this, yeah? One of my biggest regrets, of all the things which I think I've missed out on, the thing which excited me the most was that first year of people going to university. Like,
the freshers' experience.
Yeah. Even though it's nonsense because I had the career that I had,
yeah,
I still feel like I missed out on that.
Yeah.
But then this SEMA course that I was doing, it's at Manchester Uni, whatever, but I was with people in 30s, 40s, 50s
right,
who were trying to like advance themselves in their own careers and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't even have that experience anyway. I remember we'd finished training on Tuesday, so it's the tougher day in the week traditionally. I'm zonked and I'm sitting in this class with people who are like nearly twice my age. We're doing like financial accounting. I'm next to a radiator, like it's heating me up. I'm like, yo, I'm falling asleep here. But then all the while I'm realizing like, I don't need to do this. So that's why it only lasted for a year. And I wasn't surrounded by like-minded people because, like I say, I wasn't trying to do it to further my career, but the vast majority of those people were. Yeah. So, yeah, it was different. I experienced it. I learned from it as such, but yeah, not for me.
I can confirm that I've married an accountant and she's boring, so, you know.
it's not for me to talk about your partner, well?
Does she hell listen to the podcast?
I was going to say, you won't be coming home tonight if you do. Yeah. September's only 3 months away, though, so we could get you in a little...
Or you could relax.
Freshers or something?
No, listen, I'm distinctly retired.
Nedim's handing out flyers at Manchester Uni.
No.
Come to my phone party.
And do you know what made it worse, actually? So I was with my wife recently, and we went to Hello Oriental and stuff like that in town. I was looking around, I said, students got it nice these days, you know. Like, this could have been me if only I didn't start playing professionally at 17. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, take it from me. When we saw that picture of you in that hall that year, I was thinking, that's my dream goal.
Hey, I got to give a shout out to one of the teachers. I don't remember exactly what his name is, but I think he was a business studies teacher. And he said, whatever grade you get for AS level, you can expect to drop a grade for A2 level. And I said, why? He said, because it gets tougher. So I went from a B at AS level to an A2 level. So he can smoke that one.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When did you find out that you were going to play for Manchester City for the first time?
So there are two parts to that. And the debut is a big thing. But the story starts a bit before. So we just played Man United in a reserve game. Things like the Tuesday, I think it was the Tuesday night. And it was at the regional arena across from City Stadium. And it was like a good game. I think it was like 6,000 people there watching this derby. It's me versus Kieran Richardson, who was like my nemesis at the time. Hated him, all this stuff, and like had a good game. It's like proper, like those games meant a lot to me. Like when you're a reserve back then, like you enjoyed being that. But we won anyway. And then I think the next day I was at college, and then I got a call from the kit man, Les Chapman. And I was like, "Oh, you're right, Chap, how are you doing?" He said, "Oh, good, yeah." He said, "Oh, what number do you want to be?" I was, "What, for what?" He said, "For the weekend." I was like, "Well, I don't know what you mean." He said, "Oh, for the weekend, for the game." I was like, "What?" He said, "All right, I'll give you number 16. So I went from playing in that reserve game and being at college to receiving a call now saying I'm number 16 for City in the Premier League for the home game against Chelsea 2004-2005.
And this is prime Mourinho Chelsea, isn't it?
So Nicolas Anelka scored a penalty, City won 1-0. That's the only game Chelsea lost all season.
Oh, that was their only loss?
That was their only loss all season in the league. And that was the game. That was my very first game that I was in a squad for it.
So it's because of you, obviously.
Duh. So I was 17. And so the City bonus at the time, and this is way back when, it was £1,250 per point. Yeah? Which is, in the grand scheme of Premier League football, it's like a decent bonus. It wasn't amazing. It was a decent bonus. So that was £3,750 for that win. But I was 17, so I wasn't professional, and I was on £85 a week. My friend, if you want to talk about what being a king feels like, he's going to college the next week knowing full well at some point.
On the Curry Mile as well.
Mate, you might as well buy the whole mile. My
God. Danny Simpson bought a laptop with his first paycheck. What do you buy?
It definitely wasn't a laptop. I was saving up for a car, and the car I got was a VW Polo.
Great shout. Great car.
Yeah. It was until I played more games and people looked at me like, why is this guy in a VW Polo? Because as you've seen, I'm not like the smallest person either.
It's like N'Golo Kante with his Mini.
Do you know what?
Dan Byrne with his smart car. Dan Byrne has a smart car, I swear to God. Sorry. It's a publicity
illegal
stunt. But.
Yeah, that's illegal. He must be sponsored by them. There's no way he's doing that from a comfort perspective. So that was the first game I was involved in. And then the next game, I think, was the League Cup against Arsenal. Jeez. And to find out that I was playing in that was surreal, because I think what some people don't really grasp is like when you're in a reserve or 18s or whatever, you're very much just like people on the street, except you like, you know, you go train with your team. But a first team isn't there for you. Like you might train with them, but you're not part of that. You're not part of that cycle. You're separate to that. So then when all of a sudden you're just in it, like, how are you supposed to act? Like match day, or we got to be at the stadium for like 5. Okay, so I get there at 5, and now what do I do? Because I've never like had to prepare in the stadium like that. And you look around now, and previously as a reserve, senior players come to you, but now you're the young player going to them, and you're in their space. And you're sitting around like, how do I get warm? What's my prep before this? Mm. And I was only 17, 18 at the time. Right. So like, it's 17, in fact. So like, didn't know how to do it. But the feeling when you're walking out onto the pitch, firstly to do the warm-up, but then secondly when it's got like 20, 30,000 people there, because it wasn't a sellout. It's surreal, my friend.
But yeah.
What a feeling when all of a sudden, like, you're the thing which previously you would have been watching. That's you out there. And say you play well, everyone's talking about you. Like, and I still like college in a few days' time. Like,
bet you were bet you most popular one back in college when you went back.
My friend, what do you want to talk about your weekend? Let me tell you about mine.
Another question we always love to ask our guests: were you ever involved in boot cleaning of any kind? And if you were, whose boots did you get to scrub up?
So the boot cleaning thing is a very interesting topic, yeah. From my academy team, my age group kind of escaped it a bit. There was the one where you had to occasionally clean the coach's car. But the boot cleaning thing, it wasn't that big a deal at
that point.
I think
that's worse, you know, cleaning the boss's car.
Yeah, but it wasn't very often though. It was a bit of a punishment. And then for the first team, like we had Les Chapman, who was the kit man, and someone else. And like you would help to a certain extent, but the better ones are like when you travel somewhere and you have to help with all the bags coming off the coach and this, that and the other, because it's not really... Let me put it how it is, okay? So like some old school people really believe in the idea of like boot cleaning, this, that and the other, but some of it is like hazing and bullying. And as a consequence, like some people champion it, but it's a bit suspect. It's like the tip of the iceberg, because there's a lot of other stuff that goes on. And there are ways to instill discipline without having you basically have to just be a servant to someone. So I didn't have to do that. I think I'm pretty grounded. I never wanted my boots. To be fair, tell you what it was. If I was in the first team, I'd clean my own boots as well. But it's weird that when you go into the first, when you're in the academy, you clean your own boots. Then you're in the first team, someone else goes and cleans them for you. But it's almost like a test. Are you really going to let this person just take your boots and clean them? No, no, I'll clean them so that he doesn't have to. You know what I mean? So there was none of that, like, none of that stuff, really. I didn't have to clean anyone's boots. But, you know, still had to just keep as quiet as possible so I could just be accepted.
Yeah, because it did change quite abruptly, didn't it, from the YTS days to what we see now. But in terms of your career, do you remember games? Are you the sort of person who can remember everything? Or?
Depends on the game. Like, let me call myself out. So I think I scored probably 16, 20 goals, something like that. Yeah, for the record, that's more than Danny Simpson. And I can't remember all of them, which is weird considering like some of the ones that scored hundreds remember every finer detail of it. But I can't remember all of mine now. And I definitely can't remember
You're
all
the games.
You're
not tempted to
like, you can
remember
that one against Chelsea though, can't you?
Well, another interesting fact. So for me, I never used to watch my goals back because it kind of set the tone whereby good or bad, we move on to the next. Like if we're doing a team review, then we do a team review. But some of the ones you'd be like, oh, look what I did, look what I did. Like someone can then say, oh, look what you didn't do.
Right.
And you have to sit there and own well. So I had just distanced myself from it. You know what I mean?
It's like people celebrating goals. I remember Danny Webber telling me once that he would celebrate every goal because someone once said to him, that might be your last goal. You might get a horrible injury and you never get to score a goal again. So just go for it.
That's tough, yeah. I spent the 16 years of my career thinking I had a celebration plan for every game. I went into it. Basically, the way I played football was like how people play lottery. You buy that ticket thinking you're going to win,
yeah?
No matter what, you could have lost every week for your entire life, but you still play that week because in the back of your mind, like, this is it.
Yeah. And if you don't buy a ticket, what happens if you do win the week you don't buy a ticket?
You
never
go.
Forgive yourself.
There you go. So in my mind, going into every game, I was like, I'm going to score this game. I'm going to score this game. And I've got this celebration lined up. My friend, there's nearly 500 games and 16 goals. So you figure that out for yourself.
It took you 3 years to score your first goal, right?
It did. And I was concerned because I did used to be a striker in the academy. So then when all of a sudden I'm first team and I'm a defender and I'm like not really getting the opportunities and every time I do, I'm kicking it wide. To then get the most potentially the winning goal against Spurs for Sven-Goran Eriksson. And I didn't know the celebration. So my mum was in a stand. So I ran towards the corner flag, just blowing kisses towards her. It's cute. But what a feeling, what a connection. And I promise you, like the feeling of like something, all a ball is doing is crossing a line. Like you shouldn't get as emotional as you do after scoring, but I definitely did that, and it's amazing. That feeling of scoring, especially in front of your home fans, and everyone's cheering because of something that you've done.
Yeah,
like, you can't find anything else like it.
Here's a question that the whole of the Premier League want to know the answer to, right? Manchester City, mid-2000s.
Yes.
Did Micah Richards really burst onto the scene?
Micah 100% burst onto the scene. So his story is an interesting one because he came from Oldham and he was playing as a centre mid and everyone saw him for like the goals he scored. He'd be jumping up from corners. He's like standing 2 feet above everybody else, like incredible talent and all this stuff. And he was good, but he was a bit raw. I think he'd probably say that himself. As was the case for me, was the case for him. You get an opportunity through good fortune to a certain extent. And I think it was me that was injured and maybe Danny Mills was suspended. So Micah's now playing. And Micah scores and Micah plays well. Now that's Micah's spot. And that's how quickly things can just happen.
Yeah.
So if he was one of the... He was very good, but he was never perceived as a golden boy. With the golden boys, you know about them before the season starts. You know what's going to happen, and they're going to try and drip feed them into the team. But that wasn't the case with Micah. But as soon as he arrived, he was like exceptional. And then before you know it, like he's England's youngest ever defender. So in the space of like 18 months, a guy most people didn't know about that was now like the poster on like phone boxes and stuff representing Adidas. Like, listen, that's bursting on the scene if ever you saw it.
Took a Vermi burst on the scene.
Oh, mate, like no other. 100% burst onto the scene, yeah.
I was going to say, I wanted to talk about probably the most probably important period of City's history, the takeover.
Mm.
Obviously, the season before you finished 14th, you know, it was a Manchester City side where, as a United fan,
you had no concerns, yeah?
No concerns.
Even though we did the double over you had no concerns, yeah?
Sean Wright Phillips still haunts me to this day. But Talk me through what happened during that period, because obviously Sheikh Mansour bought the club off Thaksin Shinawatra.
Yeah.
There was a lot of controversy of what he was doing with the club. And then to go from, you know, kind of Premier League minnows who were just coasting every season,
yeah,
to then becoming pretty much the richest club in the world.
Yeah.
How did the dynamic of the club start to change, you know, where they were starting to target these higher profile people, and were you doubting your future? Is that what was going on?
So to add a bit more context to it, so the FA Cup coming up this weekend, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I can't believe City United haven't played an FA Cup final before. I'm like, why wouldn't you believe that? Like, have you seen Man City? Like, that's the thing.
Exactly.
It's not like it's been a century worth of the two teams going head to head. City didn't even have a derby for 3 years because we weren't even in the division. So that needs to be remembered. But anyway, so when I made my debut in 2004-05, by the end of that season, we had a chance to qualify for Europe for the UEFA Cup if we would have won the last game of the season against Middlesbrough. We didn't end up winning that. Middlesbrough made it in. They made it to the final and so on. So we were good then, yeah. The next two seasons weren't as good, with the third season after that being like particularly bad. It was like a different sense of excitement about the club, because now he was the first foreign manager and he happens to be an England manager and he wants to bring in young players and play exciting football, yeah. And that was a far cry from the end of the last era where, with Stuart Pearce at the helm, we didn't score a goal at home from February through to May, yeah. We didn't score a goal at home. Through to May. Listen, I know as well, my friend. When you're playing at the back thinking, well, one goal might decide it, it's a tough spot to be in. But Shinawatra came in, there was a sense of hope, and Sven was playing some good football. And that was a season where we managed to do double over United, and he was bringing in younger players. So there was a different feel around the club then. But then come the end of the season, it's turned into a bit of a shambles again, because his assets are being frozen, he's not going to be allowed in the country. And it's like a mini crisis. But as a player, you're never fully involved in the crises that happen above you. You're always concerned about the ones that happen right in front of you. And then that summer came, Mark Hughes came, brought in Vincent Kompany, Zabaleta and so on. And then all of a sudden, bang, takeover. New owners are here, Robinho's here. And the talk about how this is going to be the greatest thing ever. As a City fan, it's a weird thing to hear. And as a City player, because like, well, how do you become the best all of a sudden just with new owners? Because United, Chelsea, Liverpool, all these teams, Arsenal, like, They're the teams. How do you go past them when you look at the infrastructure you've got around you?
What was the reaction when Robinho came in? Because all of the reports claim that he was on his way to Chelsea from Real Madrid. And there was that famous incident where the club shop at Stamford Bridge had printed up all of these Robinho shirts. And then he turns up in South Manchester.
So Robinho is a tough one to describe now because he's in a lot of trouble now.
Okay.
Yeah. But as a guy at the time, nice guy. Don't think he knew where he was. Great player.
Apparently, he thought he was coming to United.
Yeah, because this is how much things have changed for most of my life. If someone from abroad said Manchester, they were talking about Man United.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was no discussion about Man City. Like, same way you'll say Madrid, you don't think Atletico. But that's what it was. And not to say City were as big as Atletico Madrid are right now or anything, but he came and he did his best. But like, the manager wasn't right for him because Mark Hughes was very like data-driven. You know, his bigger picture, urine test for hydration, blood test for recovery, all this stuff, like so much science behind it. And Robinho just wants to play football. I promise you that's all he wants to do. And he was pretty good at football, I'm not going to lie. But all of a sudden he's there amongst a bunch of other transfers who came before, which made sense of what the club was.
Mm.
And as every window went for City, they were getting the transfers right overall. I think there was like a Bellamy and Nigel De Jong that came in January and so on. And there was... It's a weird feeling as a player to all of a sudden see that the club can afford whoever they want.
Yeah.
But then also, not everyone wants to come. I remember Kaká didn't want to come because we basically sound like this weird football club that's just got money all of a sudden. But to see people now being linked, especially in your position, and it's not like Tom Smith or whatever, who's, you know, cheap bargain from wherever. It's like this player that is one of the best in Europe is now being linked with your club. And it's a weird one. For me, across the years when I was at City and I was playing or in the squad, they brought in like Vedran Çoğuluk, who could play right back or centre back. They brought in Jerome Boateng, who could play right back or centre back. There was Savic, who was playing centre back, Nastasic. There were a million players that came in to the positions that I could play in, but I tended to finish the seasons and, you know, and play in the team ultimately. So I wasn't too bothered as such, benefit of the doubt, wasn't too bothered. But yeah, it changed a little bit. But interestingly, so that season, 08-09, we were in the UEFA Cup. We made it to the quarterfinals. For a lot of City fans will tell you about the game against Hamburg in the quarterfinal, second leg. It's one of the biggest games and best games been played at that stadium. I was a part of that whole run. I played the whole half, second half of the season. So much so that I won 2 out of 3 Player of the Month awards for the last 3 months of the season. That was my best season for Man City. And that's the season after we were taken over. And that's the season when we're in Europe, when the team was as good as it had ever been. So the idea that everything changes negatively for people who've come through the academy and been there before isn't necessarily that simple from the get-go. Ended up going that way, but it didn't start that way. And even to put it into perspective, Mark Hughes, I played in his last game, but then as soon as Mancini came in, I barely played again. So it's not necessarily the state of the club. It's about the person at the helm and what they want to see that will dictate whether someone's ultimately good enough or not, as opposed to the perceived nature of what the club wants to try and achieve, I think.
That is interesting, because Manchester City obviously have had unprecedented success by their own standards in terms of the history of the club, particularly in recent years under Pep Guardiola. But under those previous managers you've mentioned, there was an FA Cup win and obviously the Premier League win. Do you feel in your career that you missed out on those glories because of what happened, where you went on loan to Sunderland and then, of course, you moved on to QPR, which we'll come on to. But in terms of when you look back at your career that you had and in terms of the honours that maybe could be underneath your name that aren't, does that grate on you at all?
You know what? That's a good question. It's one that will be answered differently today as it would be 10 years ago. Because I found it tough initially to go from playing under Mark Hughes to not getting a single game under Mancini because it was the same team. And I think when there's such a drastic change and you never gain the closure around it, then it's tough to accept as such. But ultimately, nobody cares from the outside, because if the team's winning, then it's irrelevant. You know what I mean? And if you come out and speak ill of a manager, you just sound like you're just a disgruntled employee who's not getting a game.
Yeah.
And I was always aware of that, hate that. And I was sad that when I left on loan that they kind of won something, because I would have loved to have been a part of it. But then you just don't know if football, maybe if I was there, maybe they wouldn't have won the FA Cup. You know what I mean? You just don't know.
Yeah.
And it's tough, because now here's the split between me as a player and me as a fan of the football club. I'm delighted they won something. In fact, to put it into real context now, I'm well-liked by the football club, by the people within it and people outside it. But there's a difference between a former player and a legend. Difference is the ones who've won something are classed as legends.
Does it annoy you that when I introduced you today on the podcast, I could have said Premier League winner, FA Cup winner, Nader Manua, but I couldn't say that. Nah. You're not bothered by that?
No. I'm not bothered by it purely because I know the work that all those guys had to put in to achieve those things, especially the Premier League one, because I was there for the first 6 months of the season. I played one league game and like 3 or 4 cup games for City. I think I could have played more. The manager decided he didn't want to play me, is what it is. But they won that. I didn't. You know what I mean? And if I would have had the opportunity to stay, like, what annoys me more than anything is some of the best football I ever played was years after I left City, in situations which weren't as good as they were at City, because I was understanding the game more and developing as a player. So I think, well, what could I have been like if I was in this infrastructure playing with better players all the time? But that's not the way football works. What you want and what you get are two completely different things, aren't they? So I'm not salty about it at all. I'm glad that City are in a position that they're in and some of my friends won Premier League titles. But I'm always left in this position where, like, I kind of need to speak to Mancini at some point before I die to figure out what caused that drastic change at the football club and if there's anything that I could have done, because then I can pass the regret over to myself instead of having everything up in the air wondering, like, well, why did things go wrong?
Football Social Daily.
Well, that was just part one of our chat with Nadim. Hit subscribe and you won't miss part two, which drops next week. You heard him talking about former City boss Roberto Mancini there, and Anua is candid about his relationship with him in part two of our interview.
When I was going through that stuff at City, I hated him, like, with a passion. Pulled me to the side and said, don't ever speak back to me again. Never played a game from that point.
Trust me, if you're a City fan, you won't want to miss it, especially as Nadim reveals what it was like to play against City at the Etihad in perhaps the most iconic Premier League game of all time, the final day of the 2011-12 season, where he was in the QPR side who very nearly derailed Aguero's magical moment. All that to come and more from Nadim next week, so stay tuned for that. But from myself, Joel and Marley, that is it for now. We'll catch you tomorrow. This is Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sports Social Podcast Network.